When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So as ever, grab your wands, dust off your broomsticks, and join us as we unlock the secrets behind Philosopher's Stone, Chapter 4, The Keeper of the Keys.
Oh, man.
I see you went full name today.
Yeah, I did go full name. Yeah. I went full Benjamin. I noticed that you have gone full Jonathan, and I know that on internet parlay, we have largely referred to you as the letter J.
That's true.
Yeah.
And you know, it didn't even occur to me that as something I needed to consider as I was just typing out my own name, like, hello, I'm Jonathan Carlin. Of course, that's my name. No need to rethink that.
Right. No edits required whatsoever. Right. So anyway, but yeah, I was like, as long as Jay's going formal, I may as well go formal too.
Right. Yeah.
So,
you know, welcome to our extremely formal podcast.
You don't know, but I just gave you a proper bow. Okay, yes, so we are into Chapter 4, The Keeper of the Keys, which is, of course, following up on our cliffhanger from Chapter 3.
Dun, dun, dun!
Wherein Harry's birthday counted down to the second and was delivered a final boom right boom. At the crest of midnight.
The crest of midnight.
Wherein we know, yeah.
That sounds like a different fantasy novel. You reading The Crest of Midnight?
Oh, yeah, I can't put it so down. we know, of course, that the boom associated is the arrival of one Rubeus Hagrid, who has arrived on the Hut on the Rock to collect one Harry James Potter to deliver him his letter officially. In this chapter, we get a whole bunch of really honestly amazing dialogue where the Dursleys, who have largely had the upper hand on the situation between Harry's relationship with them, it sort of gets turned on its head a little bit, and all of a sudden there is somebody in the room who has more authority than Vernon, which is really just like it feels like such justice.
It does feel like such justice, especially because part of his intimidation tactics are just that he's like such a large person in general, and then it's like, then Hagrid walks in and it's like even Vernon's kind of just like a small guy next to Hagrid.
Yes, of course. Yeah. But there's one of the amazing moments from the movie that I quote all the time, which is, you know, the door busts in, you see the silhouette of giant Hagrid, and then he steps in the door, he's like, sorry about that.
Yeah. That's not actually in the book.
It's not in the book, I know. Yeah. But it is amazing because it's like you can just tell so quickly that Hagrid is like, while it is the the middle of the night, while he can look potentially intimidating, he is just a complete kind-hearted soul who is just there to finally be able to return to Harry to bring him off to Hogwarts. However, in this exchange, we of course know that there's a little bit of what would be the right way to describe it here? The Dursleys basically do stand up for themselves, I suppose.
As best they can,
you know. We discover that to Hagrid's utter dismay, the Dursleys have not taught Harry anything whatsoever about his position in the wizarding world.
Or that he's a wizard at all, or even what Hogwarts is, or anything.
Even down to the simple fact that, he doesn't know anything about what happened to his parents. There's the whole car crash situation, and Hagrid is just like, what? You must be kidding me right now. Honestly, this is a really great chapter because you get like a lot of nice warmth really for the first time since really chapter one, when we last saw Hagrid, and just sort of his like sadness towards leaving Harry. So
yeah,
he's back. Happiness is back.
He's back. It's fantastic. I love right away how when he gets, well, a few things. So right when he gets there, I love when he's like, couldn't make us a cup of tea, could you? It's not been an easy journey. And it's like, first of all, how did he get there at all? Like, because they leave on the boat, but the boat was already there. Like, I don't understand how Hagrid got to the island.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't specifically either. It's undisclosed magic of sorts.
Undisclosed magic of sorts. There's a lot of like undisclosed things Hagrid's supposed to be doing there. So that's kind of funny. I guess he says like I was allowed to do a little bit of magic to get to you or to bring you your letter, and it's like, by who? Who allowed you to do magic? Like, but what governing body like allowed you to do it? Like, was it just Dumbledore?
It's just Dumbledore.
It has to be, right? Because otherwise it's like anyone allowing you to do magic would then have to like acknowledge, like, how would you do it without a wand, which they think you don't have, which clearly you do. So yeah, it had to be Dumbledore. But if it's Dumbledore, then it's like, then you can just always do magic, right? Because you just work for Dumbledore at the school. Who's gonna know?
Right. Well, and this goes back to one of our original, we talked about it a little bit in one of the past episodes, but like, again, the relationship between Hagrid and Dumbledore is utterly ironclad.
Yeah.
And in my mind, it would largely be the case that like Hagrid regards rules as far as the word of, you know, the big man himself, Dumbledore. And
yeah.
So if Dumbledore authorizes it, then Hagrid is like, if it's good by you, then it's good by me.
It's good by me.
And a big piece of that is, of course, the fact that, you know, Hagrid has his famous pink flowery umbrella.
Yes.
Which I love. I mean, again, as a kid, this was like the perfect juxtaposition of like large, you know, grisly, intimidating looking person who is otherwise then carrying this pink flowery umbrella, which is so innocuous and seems so innocent and all the rest. Like, it doesn't seem like it would go with his character, but at the same time, like, perfectly fits. But he says at some point in time in this chapter that his wand was in fact actually snapped in half.
Right.
However, we know that at some point in time it must have been repaired, because clearly it is concealed inside of said pink umbrella.
Yeah, they always act like the pieces are concealed inside of there. But like, if your wand is broken in half, like, it cannot do magic anymore. Like, we've seen Ron's wand like almost split in half, basically can't do magic. And then you see Harry's Holly wand is basically split in half, is like holding on by a thread, but it can't do magic anymore.
Yep.
So it's like, if it's just the pieces next to each other in the umbrella, it's not doing magic. Like, it's been repaired, which is just like, it's like you couldn't possibly know the first time you read it, but it is like a little nod to the Elder Wand and its power, because of all the magic that the Elder Wand is supposedly able to do, like way later on, way in Deathly Hallows, they always talk about this crazy magic. You never actually see it do anything,
right?
Except repair Harry's Holly wand. Like, that's the big magic you actually see it do. So it is kind of like a cool like nod to that, like as soon as you meet Hagrid.
Yeah, and again, this goes back to that point, because it's like, we know that Dumbledore is currently the one wielding the Elder Wand, and
yes,
therefore it must be the case that if Hagrid declares that his wand was snapped in half, like I don't see it in Hagrid's nature to disclose that information if it didn't actually happen. Like,
yeah,
wink, wink, they totally snapped it in half. They didn't actually, because clearly I'm holding it.
Yeah.
I feel like,
but like, it definitely was, because why it snapped in half is because he is assumed to be a murderer, basically.
Yeah, to have opened the Chamber of Secrets,
yeah,
released the monster within, which led to the death of eventually Mona Myrtle. But so anyway, this goes back to my point where it's like the whole Fantastic Beasts saga, it's like, what is Hagrid obsessed with? Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah.
And the whole saga is leading up to, we know in 1992, the Chamber of Secrets will eventually be opened. So 50 years prior to that is 1942. Dumbledore's big duel with
1945.
Grindelwald, 1945. Yeah, so we're within the proper time frame for when Hagrid would have been aiding Dumbledore in any capacity whatsoever, including his role as the Keeper of Keys at Hogwarts School, which is a role that is, you know, granted to him by Dumbledore immediately upon his expulsion. So what we have, again, always led ourselves to believe is that Hagrid's role in helping Dumbledore take down Grindelwald in 1945 was a favor repaid by Dumbledore, not only in lifelong trust, but also in the reparation of his wand.
Yeah. Okay, so it's so interesting too about Hagrid being like immediately hired back on after being apparently like assumed to murder or whatever, because Dumbledore works at the school, so Hagrid being hired back on, and like Dumbledore never really believes it's Hagrid who killed Myrtle
at all. Yep,
so like, one, it is baffling to me that literally no one in 50 years asks the ghost of Myrtle how she died.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah. Like that didn't come up.
That didn't come up.
Part of the investigation.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Or I feel like there should be a line somewhere that's like, anytime anyone asks her, she just like balls and runs away or something.
Easy kind of way. In fact, it's probably just implied on some level that is what happened.
Perhaps it's implied, but it is baffling that that happens. But it's also baffling to me that Dumbledore basically never assumes it's Hagrid, which means that he doesn't think Aragog was the monster, which means, as far as he's concerned, the monster is still at large.
Oh, true.
So it's like, what is he doing for 50 years like with like the knowledge that the monster exists?
Not to mention, at this point in time, Dumbledore is not even headmaster. He is the Transfiguration Professor and Armando Dippet would be the headmaster. So Dumbledore's got a lot of pull.
A lot of pull to be like, okay, like, Armando, hear me out, bro. Okay, I know Hagrid just apparently killed someone with a giant spider and is a murderer. Hear me out. We hire him. What do you think?
I don't think it'll cause
any
issues.
We keep him around the students and give him a smidge of authority. You're in?
He will have keys to everywhere. Yeah. Does that seem like a problem?
I want him to have access literally everywhere.
Yeah, so somehow, some way, Hagrid stays on. And the good news is that we of course, know that Hagrid is not a dangerous person, is in fact a kind soul, and is just having prejudice used against him, which you never want to see. But it's really amazing. Like I said, I mean, I think the warmth that Hagrid brings to the story almost immediately.
He does light a fire right away.
He does light a fire.
It's almost
right
like
away.
Magically warm, too.
Right, yes. Because it seems like, I mean, Uncle Vernon has tried to light a fire using, like, the packaging from the potato chips that he's brought with him, which is like, that was never going to be a fire ever.
I know, like, I'm imagining like a bag of Lay's or something.
Sure, yeah.
Standard bag of potato chips, which, like, one, even if you had four of those and they were highly flammable, they would burn for like 10 seconds together.
I mean, you do not have a crackling fire.
You don't have a crackling fire.
Yeah. But
on top of that, they're not flammable.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So the thing is there is that it's like, part of you is like, did Hagrid just have like wood in his coat? And it's like, you might be like, well, that would be ridiculous. Who would carry wood? But it's like, he also has a live owl inside of his coat.
And mice. What are the mice for?
Yeah.
I know. I guess maybe he needs to feed the owl. I don't know.
Could be.
I mean, that owls. Was the one at the end. He's like, there might be a few more field mice in there. And it was like, why? Why are you just carrying mice with you? That's crazy.
Yes, but it is. It's a remarkable turnaround from the beginning of the chapter to the end to see that Harry goes from sleeping underneath this like bare thread rag on the soft piece of floor. Yeah,
the softest piece of floor.
Right. So there does seem to be something rather cozy about, I think Hagrid says, you can kip in this tonight, which I just love that line.
Yeah. I want to say there's like an early thing where his coat is described as like a bearskin coat here, but like for the rest of the story, it's a moleskin overcoat.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which it seems like moles being quite small. It's like, how many moles?
I know. Like, why do we switch gears? His coat's also described as being black in this chapter, which is just like, I'm just like, Hagrid wears a brown coat.
Yeah, okay? Yeah. Like, I agree.
Wrong. You got the wrong color here.
Brown coat
for Hagrid. I love that when he gets there, he says, like, he immediately asks them to brew some tea, and then he says, I'd also not say no to something stronger if you've got it, mind. And then it's like, he's just asking the Dursleys, like, I'm here, would you mind making me some tea, or do you have any alcohol?
Yeah.
Basically. And what's great about it is that, like, after they don't, he's like, don't worry, I've got literally all the supplies and alcohol with me.
A literal kettle will come out of this coat.
I have a kettle. I can make fire. I've got teacups. I've got tea bags. I've got water to make the tea. And I've got some other amber liquid to take a swig of. So it's like, he asks for all these things, but he's already got it all.
He does already have it. I noticed that exact same thing. It's like, well, that's kind of funny. Oh. But I love the like the description of like, soon the hut was full of the sound and smell of sizzling sausage.
Squashy sausages, Ben. There's a squashy package of sausages.
You're right. Well, but they sound delicious once cooked.
They absolutely do. I just wanted to point out squashy because it's one of those very Harry Potter words that, like, you don't use in regular life very much, but, like, it's already been used to describe Uncle Vernon's face when Harry stepped on it, and now this is being used to describe the package of sausages, and it's, like, often the word for, like, the Gryffindor armchairs and the sleeping bags in the Great Hall. It's like, why is it's such a Harry Potter word, squashy.
Squashy, I know, yeah. So we should adopt it into our vernacular even more.
I just want a shirt that just says squashy.
That's a great one. Our first official piece of merch is the squashy shirt.
The squashy shirt. You know what, though? It sounds, now, you know, I was imagining a t-shirt, but I feel like it needs to be like a really like thick, cozy kind of thing.
Maybe it won't say squashy. It will just simply be
it's
squashy.
Just the squashy shirt.
Like a squashy sweater. And it's like, it's like the squashy sweater is just like a really oversized, cozy, thick sweater.
Yeah.
That you could kip in if needed.
If you could kip in.
Yeah.
Kip in.
But no, I love this. Again, you know, I mean, it's just, it seems good. I mean, I'm like hungry on behalf of literally all the occupants of the hut. So like the sound of the first six fat, juicy, slightly burnt sausages, it's like, oh man.
I know. Every time I read that, I'm like, I'm hungry.
I know. Yeah. It's like, I'm going to go buy some squashy sausages.
Yeah.
As soon as I get out of work. Let's see here. Oh, I love this though. So shortly thereafter, Hagrid says, call me Hagrid. He said, everyone does. And this is like one of those things where it's like we even mentioned it in the first chapter about how Rubeus means the color red, which is of course his name. And yet whenever I think of Hagrid, I never think of it as if we are referring to him by his surname.
Oh yeah,
like,
right.
I feel like Hagrid is like his first name,
right,
and his last name, and he also has another first name called Rubeus.
Yeah, but Hagrid is the true name of Hagrid.
Is the true name of Hagrid. Yeah, it's pretty perfect. So, I like the clarification there. The call me Hagrid. Everyone does. Hagrid.
Well, call me Jonathan. Almost no one does, except my wife.
There you go.
The next thing is just basically Hagrid getting right down to business. Freaking out at the Dursleys for not, like, I love Hagrid's like backtracking. Like, he's like, what he assumes Harry knows is that he's a wizard. What does Hagrid think? Hagrid thinks that Harry knows that he's a wizard
and that his parents were tragically killed by a dark lord,
a dark wizard, and that he knows what Hogwarts is.
Yes,
but it turns out Harry knows literally none of it. Not that magic is real, not that wizards exist, doesn't know what Hogwarts is, doesn't know how his parents died, any of it. And like, you can see him like reeling, like, oh god, wow, oh boy, Hagrid, I'm the one who has to tell you all of this.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yes. Well, and it's interesting because we've said it a couple of times as well, and I'm going to come back to it again. And then I think once we're past this chapter, I don't think we'll have to anymore. But we will learn that part of the reason that so much of this information was withheld actually is really not coming so much from Vernon's end of the spectrum, but rather Petunia's, who had grown up with her sister Lily, who was like sent off to wizard school, and her parents were just so proud of the fact that there was a witch in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we will eventually learn of the really extreme jealousy that Petunia had rather than like initial disinterest. Like in fact, she herself would have loved to have gone to Hogwarts. And felt like more left out by not being included. But then from there, you know, you see that Petunia's parents were also just couldn't have been happier with this. Like they didn't judge Lily for being, you know, in this way different from what they had always known. And they celebrated the fact that she was in fact magical. And it came across in a way to Petunia that must have made her feel less than for then not having these abilities.
Yeah. I mean, you can see why Petunia then adopts this, like, not only like very normal, stereotypically regular lifestyle, but like adopts it as like, this is absolutely the way things should be.
Yes. And it's like, because there was like nothing that anybody could do to make her a witch upon not having just been a witch in the first place. She sort of had to like go in like a kind of overcorrect in the other direction. But in addition to that, I feel like it goes back to that sentiment where she, I feel like, was intending to make Harry feel discarded or less than by being different in any capacity.
Sure.
And therefore, so she was, I feel like, treating Dudley in the way she felt as though her parents had treated Lily, and therefore making Harry feel the same way that she, Petunia, would have felt growing up.
It's all coming full circle.
I know, it's all coming full circle. Indeed. So, but that was jumping ahead just a little bit there. So,
yeah, then we get to the big moment. Ah, go boil your heads, both of you. Harry, you're a wizard.
But I can't be a lizard.
I can't be a lizard. Yeah. Oh, I love the meme where it's like, you're a wizard, Harry. And he's like, you're a hairy wizard.
It's so spot on.
So spot on. So exactly right. Yeah, I love that line. This is one where it's like, in the movies, they're like, you're a wizard, Harry. It's like, it's a backwards, whereas in the book it says, Harry, you're a wizard. Either way, either delivery always gives me chills.
Oh, yeah.
Always like, the beginning of the journey.
I know. Yay. It's really happening. And of course, you get the final momentous occasion where at this point in time, there is nothing the Dursleys can do to prevent Hagrid from reaching into his coat to pull out a letter and physically hand it to Harry, who is finally able to open it and receives his admittance to Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry.
Right. We await your owl by no later than July 31st, which is today, as the story goes. That is, it's funny. It's like, oh, good. I guess Hagrid did have to come today.
Yes.
But I also think it's funny that the letter is signed Minerva McGonagall, which, I mean, that's not really that funny or anything, but it does make me think that that makes it, you know, seem like she's the one sending the letters, which to me then means she's the one being really like passive aggressive with like the address and like where Harry's laying on the floor and like the smallest bedroom. Like that's McGonagall being like, humph.
You know? Well, like, so I was curious about that as well, because I feel like there's the line where Hagrid says, like, I was allowed to do it to get you your letters and to get you to school and everything, but I'm not really supposed to be doing it otherwise. Or was it Hagrid? Because it almost feels like a little bit, it feels more McGonagall than it feels Hagrid to
yeah.
me. Like, Hagrid just feels like so good natured that I can't see the passive aggressive crossing his mind.
Right.
Not that McGonagall isn't also just splendid, but yeah. I could see her being a bit more like she's watched the Dursleys. She has a greater scope of things. She's like, I knew from the moment we left you here that this was going to be a problem.
This was a bad idea.
I have been waiting my revenge.
Right, like, and this is how I will do it.
The next page, we get he does it a couple of times, and they're slightly different iterations each time, but it's the Hagrid gives us galloping gorgons.
Galloping gorgons, which is a creature we never actually encounter in the story.
Yep, and this exclamation, I think, is eventually replaced with Merlin's beard.
Merlin's beard. Galloping gargoyles later in this same chapter.
Yep, we get that one as well. Hagrid sends the letter to Professor Dumbledore, letting him know that he has successfully found Harry and just throws it out into the air.
I love how he includes a little note about the weather. I gave Harry his letter. Take him to buy things. Weather's horrible. Hope you're well.
I know.
Like, did you need to include that?
It reminds me so much of our grandfather, who I feel like has a heavy emphasis on tracking and recording the weather, like, yes, in like a daily journal.
You're right. He has a weather journal.
He has a weather journal. And it feels like, I don't know if, you know, in earlier days of communication, it would be like a common thing to just sort of like include in like a letter or something, because I always thought like, oh, the weather's horrible.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh man, that's so funny that like out of the what, like 25 words he used, he saved two to include a weather report.
Weather's horrible.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I also like, this is like just a little thing. We mentioned earlier where it sounds like McGonagall had this like almost sense of superiority about like the, you know, being magical, I suppose. Like, oh, they're not completely stupid. Back in chapter one.
Yep.
So here where Hagrid's telling Harry what muggles are, it's like his description of it is that that's what we call non-magic folk like them. And it's your bad luck you grew up in a family of the biggest muggles I ever laid eyes on. It's like he's almost using it there as like a little bit more derogatory towards like all muggles, that like it seems like it is a classification of people, which is non-magical. But then like if you're like a muggle, you could also be like derogatory and like you're like aggressively non-magic on purpose.
Right. Yeah. Yes, exactly. It's like the scale of muggle that you are, and the more muggly you are, the worse you are. And
right.
Like, well, that's also probably not not terribly fair.
Not helpful. Like, not know, helpful.
People,
yeah.
People can't help not being magical.
Yeah. I feel like there's a little bit of a Snape hint here in the next paragraph too, where Petunia's talking about Lily coming home. She came home every vacation with her pockets full of frog spawn, turning teacups into rats. So what's interesting about that is that that shouldn't be allowed.
Like, yes, it
clearly
should be
Petunia has character. Has several exact examples of like things Lily was doing, turning teacups into rats. I think that's even a lesson you get to see later on.
Yeah.
But it's like, and we know that the way the trace works is that like if you're in a Muggle household and you're a wizard kid and you do magic, it'll like they'll be able to hone in on you because magic happened there. They won't know that like, oh, Harry Potter did magic at the Dursleys. They'll just be like, well, magic happened at the Dursleys and Harry's living there, so it was Harry.
So it was Harry,
even though it was Dobby.
It's always a very, very unfair advantage that kids that come from wizard families then have.
Oh, I know.
They can practice all summer.
Oh, I know. And they're like, we rely on wizard parents to patrol this particular thing. And I'm like, this is the exact reason Slytherin House has won the House Cup 7 years in a row. Because all the other houses are like, kids, stop doing magic. And all the Slytherin families you know are just like, all right, here we go. They're not going to know it's you. Get down here. We're practicing Lumos. We're going to do the summoning charm. We're going to get ahead over the summer. Cool? Cool.
Yes.
It's like, yeah. And of course, if you're in Slytherin, you're the kind of student who's like, absolutely. I want to be ahead.
Yeah. Underlying
any advantage.
Yep.
But so the fact that Lily was at home turning teacups into rats and not getting caught suggests that she couldn't have been doing it at her house because she would have been zeroed in on immediately.
Right.
Because there. So it suggests that she was doing it with a different wizard or witch who lived nearby. Not that you'd know anything about the trace or anything at this point, but it almost definitely means her and Snape were doing it together.
Yes.
Hanging out in this way.
It must have been in proximity close enough to Snape's mother that it would be acceptable, or that at the very least the Ministry for Magic would believe that this was an acceptable use of magic and not underage.
Yeah.
As we scroll down the page a little bit there's the exclamation as Hagrid discovers the fact that Harry is under the impression that his parents were killed in a car crash. His reaction is kind of interesting because this has always sort of stood out to me because it's a couple of different things. He says, how could a car crash kill Lily and James Potter? Like, partially on some level, it's like as if Hagrid is suggesting like, yeah, as a wizard, you would never be subject to a car crash. Like this,
right.
This would not be something that would, like, so it makes you wonder whether or not some of the accidental magic that Harry has performed up until this stage of his life.
Yeah.
If like in the event that you were a wizard who was driving an automobile, which under most circumstances you probably just don't need to.
Yeah.
Because you have other means of travel, which would otherwise be faster. But it almost suggests that somehow possibly like wizards in that moment might enact a form of wandless or nonverbal magic that might like cause the cars to like just bounce or something.
Yeah,
like
it does
that,
seem like there's like some sort of involuntary reaction that would occur to protect wizards in a situation like this.
It's yes.
Like we talked earlier, like with Mrs. Fig, like there's no reason her leg should have been broken for any amount of time because she knows wizards who can mend it immediately.
Lickety split, not so split,
exactly. As it were.
Yeah. And
so it's like, if you have regular wounds or ailments as a wizard, they can cure them immediately. It's that they have their own set of like magical wounds and ailments that require like magical cures and potions and stuff like that. So you're right. It does seem like it does suggest that like something as mundane as a car crash could not possibly kill a wizard.
Yes.
Although Harry and Ron do crash the car into the Whopping Willow, which I guess they don't die from though.
That's true. The other bit I was going to say about this line is that I love Hagrid's way of responding to this, but he goes, it's an outrage, a scandal. I love the use of scandal there. And they carried it over into the films as well. He says it in the film.
Yeah.
Also, and I'm always like, scandal. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah. Through the Gryffindor is supported by Pair Eyewear. Y'all, I am so excited for our upcoming Through the Griffin tour. It is going to be such a good time. But as ever, when you're going to be spending time in front of people, you want to be looking your darned best. And let me tell you what, Pair Eyewear has arrived just in the nick of time. Like, honestly, I was immediately blown away with my new frame. So let me walk you through exactly what they do. So starting at just $60, including your prescription, you can get your base frames, which are like sleek, modern, and stylish. But that is really just the start, because from there, you get to fully customize each frame, all of your looks, by simply snapping on the top frames. And they actually have an entire collection of Harry Potter frames. So like for the upcoming tour, I was so pumped because I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to find some super cool Slytherin frames that I can like wear. But then as I was clicking around, I've been watching X-Men 97, which is like so good. And they actually had X-Men frames as well. And then May the 4th is coming up, or maybe by the time you're listening, it's already passed. But like they have a huge collection of over 20 Star Wars frames as well. So I had a very hard time narrowing, and I ended up getting two. I got the X-Men ones and I got some Slytherin ones. So many different like fandom frames you can choose from. And I never thought to accessorize my glasses with fandom stuff, but now you can. And it's so easy to change between them. Like they have little magnets on them, so you can just slap a different frame onto the front of your glasses and then easily switch it out. I've been doing it all day. It's so fun. And before you commit to anything, you can explore all the different possibilities with their virtual try-on. But again, the base frames for men, women, or kids. I think, honestly, kids would love this because you can just switch them out and they're so fun looking. They all start at $60. One pair, infinite possibilities. Go to PairEyewear.com and use code GRIFFIN for 15% off your first pair, and support the show by mentioning that Through the Gryffindor sent you in your post-checkout survey. That's PairEyewear.com, code GRIFFIN. Oh man, let's see. Moving on. Next, he has to tell Harry about Voldemort and how he survived about it. And I love what he's like. He's so nervous about saying the name Voldemort here. And Harry makes the suggestion, could you write it down? He says, nah, I can't spell it. I'm like, that always bothers me because like Voldemort is not hard to spell at all. It is spelled exactly like it sounds. And like, I mean, he just wrote a letter, you know, like the word tomorrow is harder to spell than Voldemort, you know, that's in there.
Right.
He correctly spelled professor and Dumbledore. Like, I think you could handle Voldemort.
Yeah.
At least you could write it down to the point that Harry could read what you think it sounds like.
That's you know? True. Yeah. I mean, spelling doesn't terribly matter if you know, as long as you get the rough hue of it. The other kind of interesting thing from an audiobook standpoint is at this point in the audiobook, Jim Dale is pronouncing Voldemort in that way where it's a silent T at the end, Voldemort. And as the films are released, they do pronounce the T. And as of book five, I was actually just reading this fun fact. I didn't know it. As of book five, Jim Dale actually starts to refer to him as Voldemort instead of Voldemort.
Okay.
Which I just found to be kind of interesting.
He just sort of switches.
That he like changes course. Yeah, like five books in. So that's sort of interesting. One.
It is an important occasion that it's the first time Harry hears the name Voldemort.
Yep,
that's when true. Hagrid says it. That's kind of interesting. We talked before about whether or not people coming out of the Imperius curse would have been a cue that Voldemort was gone. Hagrid kind of confirms that here, like, didn't know who to trust, didn't dare get friendly with strange wizards. People came out of trances and stuff like that.
Yep, absolutely.
Yep.
Now, we also get a little bit more explanation about Lily and James, and there's a little bit of like one of those like consistency questions as well, where it says, your mom and dad were as good a witch and wizard as I ever knew. Head boy and girl at Hogwarts in their day.
Yep.
Interestingly, we will eventually learn that out of the Marauder, it is not James who is prefect, but rather Remus Lupin. And so his eventual assignment to head boy is kind of interesting because it means that they don't exclusively pull from
the prefix. Yeah.
However, possibly could pull from Quidditch captains, which James would have been in his sixth year. And Harry also eventually is Quidditch captain. So
that's true.
And at the very least, it sounds like Quidditch captains and prefects have similar allowances in terms of additional amenities and yeah. use of the prefix restrooms and that type of thing. So it's possible that that's how that comes to be. It's not a surprise at all that Lily is head girl because yeah. she's just sort of extraordinary.
I guess we don't know for sure that she was a prefect, but...
that's a good point as well. Yeah. yeah, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, but either way, too bad for... the assumption I always had... like before you do that math is that you need to be a prefect and that like then when you're going into your seventh year, it's like just one of the there's two prefects per year, right? One boy, one girl per house.
Seems like one boy, one girl per house.
Oh yeah. So then you'd think it's just between you and the three other prefects from the other houses.
Yes.
Yeah. That gets to be like the head boy of all the prefects or whatever. But
right.
alas, no, it could also just be James Potter over there.
Can you imagine how mad all those prefects would be? They'd be like, are you kidding me?
Oh yeah.
Like,
yeah. Do you think Snape was a prefect?
Oh,
I super love to think that he was.
I don't know. I can sort of see it though. I mean, he's a great student. Slughorn right. taught him.
Right, that's true. And he would have been great in Slughorn's class specifically because yeah. he's great at potions.
He's great at potions.
So he would have been excelling there. We know he like was filling out his Defense Against the Dark Arts OWL really hard. I guess he would have been selected for prefect before that, but it does seem like he was in that crowd. Probably wasn't like super popular, it doesn't sound like. So maybe they like...
I could see Slughorn over like looking past him for that because he's got the Slug Club. He's like, yeah. like well-connected people. And Snape is not really that
yeah.
that kind of student.
Yeah. I mean, not that you have to like necessarily be like popular to be like a prefect, but typically
Percy.
I would... Yeah, Percy. Yeah. yeah, that's true. Percy's a prefect.
Yeah.
I can see you'd want like probably a considered well-liked student by your peers to be a prefect, though.
You want them to have the some measure of authority, and that probably comes with not being somebody that is going to just be questioned every turn.
But at that exact rate, though, like the Marauders are then picking on a prefect. If Snape is a prefect, then the Marauders are picking on him, and he is not like playing that card at all.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. But I guess, I mean, Lupin's there as well, but he's sort of just off in the background like, yeah, well, whatever. Yeah.
I mean, they specifically say they think that they assigned Lupin as the prefect as in hopes of it calming down the rest of the Marauders. But
I also like the idea of Snape being a prefect just because that it means like, as far as Snape's concerned, it's like him and Lupin and the Ravenclaw and Hufflepuffs. And they're like, nah, it's none of you guys. It's James Potter. He's like you are you what?
No,
it is not James Potter.
Oh, that would be so infuriating.
Yeah.
So infuriating.
Yeah, when
you're in high school and you've got one of those people who is just like the bane of your existence and they find glory. It's just like nothing could be worse.
Oh, what's worse? Is he going to ask out the girl I like? What?
No. She said he was a tow rag. Oh, well, anyway, so much for that. We've gotten really off the rails here. We learn a little bit more about early members of the First Order of the Phoenix, including the McKinnons, the Bones, and the Pruitts, who we've previously mentioned before. The Pruitts, Fabian and Gideon, are, in fact, Molly Weasley's two brothers.
Yep.
Yep. And kind of just goes to show to Harry that it wasn't just his family that was impacted. And we will eventually learn, obviously, that now the Pruitts, you know, niece and nephews will be fellow students with Harry in the form of the Weasleys.
Yep.
We will have Susan Bones, who is a fellow classmate of Harry's as well. And we'll eventually meet her Madam Bones, correct. So it is the case that Harry is going to school. And then the one that goes unmentioned is, of course, also the Longbottoms.
Yeah. Well, they weren't. I mean, well, so this is Hagrid's a little bit incorrect what he says here, because he says that he killed some of the best witches and wizards of the age, including the McKinnons, Bones, and the Pruitts. But I think later on it's confirmed that the Pruitts were actually killed by a group. It was like the two of them versus five Death Eaters to take them down. So either he's speaking more like on Voldemort's orders they were killed.
That's how I read it.
Yeah. But also then the Longbottoms would not have been attacked under Voldemort's orders because they're attacked after he falls.
That's a good point. That's a good point. But what it means though is that Harry will eventually be going to school with a potential handful of other students whose lives have been massively impacted in the same way that his has been.
Yes.
Just Harry has kind of like his own kind of specific and unique role inside of that.
Yep.
Let's see here. Hagrid eventually goes on to say that, like, some say he died. Kiteswallop, in my opinion. Don't know if he had enough human left in him to die, though.
It's a pretty good guess.
I was like, yeah, I highlighted that. And I was like, Hagrid is pretty much dead on.
Pretty
like,
much, yeah.
Pun intended on that one. But basically, because when it comes down to it, like the exact reason why Voldemort does not die in this circumstance is because his own physical being, we've always called it like Voldemort Prime, the version of him that is like the physical body existence that includes like his mind and other, you know, body and everything, like it can't be destroyed in that circumstance because he's otherwise anchored. So
yeah, and it's like, I mean, not having enough human left in him to die is exactly basically what's happening. It's like, because he keeps splitting his soul, which makes him less and less human. So it's not that he doesn't have enough human left in him to die, it's that all the human parts of him have been spread into 8 other things.
Yes, yep, yeah, exactly.
Or 7 other things, I guess.
Right. So then we kind of go forward, we get a little bit more back and forth with Hagrid and the Dursleys, who are sort of like, you know, kind of just having it out of as to whether or not this is going to happen.
Yep.
Hagrid has a cool line here where we can just give a little bit of backstory, but Hagrid said his name has been down ever since he was born.
Yep, I highlighted the exact same line. I was like, oh, that's interesting, because it means that Harry, upon being born, was immediately showing signs of magic.
Yes. And this is, again, kind of like further reading that you have to do in the deeper, wider wizarding world. However, you can go onto Pottermore and learn about the Quill of Admittance and Book of Acceptance.
Yep.
Do I have those the right way?
I think so.
Okay.
Those are all the right words.
All the right words. But the idea, I believe, is usually that the Quill will recognize when you have first like exhibited some amount of magical ability, and it won't be penned into the page until it's like fully confirmed that it's enough magical ability to attend the school.
The book and the Quill both have to agree that you've like displayed enough magic to come to Hogwarts or something.
Basically it means that like from the word go, from the moment Harry was born, it was like beyond a shadow of a doubt, this
Harry
boy
Potter.
Is magical. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what determines like whether or not you get your letter. Conversely, though, I think we eventually find out that Neville's name doesn't get written in the book until he's like 8 or something.
Yeah. When his Uncle Algy drops him out of a window. By mistake, I believe, and he bounces.
But that's also kind of back to the car crash thing. It's like, what? A fall from a tower? Kill the Longbottoms? It's a scandal.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. It's like, why would that wouldn't happen. Magic would protect them.
Magic would protect them, yeah.
100%. No, yep, absolutely. We get Vernon, honestly, is exhibiting quite a bit of bravery, all things being equal. He says, I'm not paying for some crackpot old fool to teach him magic tricks, which is what, you know, Vernon is yelling at Hagrid.
Yeah, which, I mean, what a misunderstanding of the system. I mean, it's absolutely free to go to Hogwarts, you know?
Exactly.
Don't have to pay anything. I mean, right. I guess you have to buy the materials to go, but even that, it's like, actually, you don't, because Harry's just got a fortune of his own.
Right, I know. This is like one of those things where it's like, oh man, I almost wish Hagrid just dunks on them in this moment.
I know.
But of course, he's a bit more, his hackles kind of go up at the reference to Dumbledore as a crackpot old fool. And you get to just see like one of those, like where like Hagrid's life, his livelihood, you know, has been so helped along throughout the years by Dumbledore's, you know, approval and support of him.
Yep.
And you can tell that runs awfully deep for Hagrid, who says, never insult Albus Dumbledore in front of me, which, you know, it's just like one of those kind of like, I don't know what I love so much about it, but it's like the like absolute nature of allegiance between people is just something that like makes me happy.
Yeah.
In this case, because I know all the people involved are good people. It's like, yes. Okay.
Hooray.
And again, it's just nice to see the Dursleys being taken down a notch.
Oh, I know. And then he tries to turn Dudley into a pig, and then has the fantastic line afterwards where he says, meant to turn him into a pig, but I suppose he was so much like a pig anyway, there wasn't much left to do. Which I just like, I love it. It's like, there's the constant like underflow of like magic has like a sense of humor about it, and it's like, yeah, we don't it's pretty much done, so tail.
right, especially because he's like all, you know, again, Hagrid has come in, he's done a decent bit of magic. I mean, he lit the fire, you know, like,
yeah,
he's done some stuff since they've been in the room, and he's done all those things just fine. But I guess Transfiguration, certainly a slightly more complex
art. But as far as he's concerned, there's a very reasonable explanation for it.
Right. Yes. Yeah. It's like how similar are these two things? It's like, well, if it's pretty similar already, then
It's not like sympathy. It's not like, yeah. It's like, no. So if it, the more similar it is, the easier it is to do. It's like, as far as magic's concerned, it's like, you want me to turn the box into a trunk? Like, it's already
He's a box.
Like it's there.
It's pretty much good. A trunk. Yeah. I'll trunkify your box, but it'll still be a box. Yeah. Because the box was the trunk in the first place.
Yeah.
So we get the line, of course, and we've kind of already touched on this. The snap my wand in half and everything, but Dumbledore let me stay on as gamekeeper. Great man, Dumbledore.
Great man, Dumbledore. Great man,
Dumbledore. And then that pretty much closes us out of the chapter.
It does. Harry does ask him, why were you expelled? And he just skates right past that, not willing to be like, oh, you know, murder. Never mind. It's like, geez, Harry, wait for book two. Why don't you, man?
I know, seriously, can you have some patience?
Gosh.
Like, I gotta leave some mysteries left to be solved. But yeah, so that'll, of course, we've got our little couple of dormice in one of the pockets.
Oh, I know. Why are you carrying mice around, man?
I know.
Yeah. Don't get it. I mean, my only explanation is that he would use it to feed the owls, but like also like Harry, you know, never. It's not like Harry's ever keeping mice up in his bedroom. If you know Hedwig needs to eat, he's just like, just go outside and just hunt.
Right. You know? Yeah. You know, and it's funny too though, because you know, if you know us, you know, through any of our other works, you'll know that we're a big fan of the fantasy series Name of the Wind. And one of the like common tropes in Name of the Wind, not even tropes, but just things that come back to a lot, is cloaks with numerous little pockets.
Yes.
And it's like the idea like that, like, you know, you can always like a good wizard almost always has lots of little trinkets and objects kind of stashed away in their cloak. And so I actually reading this now, you know, I do have a little bit of that like curiosity as to like whether or not this was like continuing that trope in the realm of fantasy novels.
Oh, sure.
A little bit, where it's sort of like, yeah, like, you know, carrying lots of stuff and lots of odd little pockets. It's like, this is like what you do. This is like, you know, your source of a partial source of power. So I don't know if that's like a nod to that or at all, or if it's just a pure coincidence, but either way, I like Hagrid's coat full of stuff.
I do too. One of my favorite things in like any story is whenever the main character gets like a new, like, tool or object or like weapon or something.
Yeah,
it always feels like, oh, you got another little thing to put in your arsenal. That's super fun. Like Harry gets the cloak, and then he gets the map, and eventually he has the sword. And it's like, just getting all these little power ups all over the place.
I know. Yeah, it's like you're like actively like playing the video game
exactly,
and getting
yeah.
all those power ups as you go. That being said, as long as we're talking about the coat, we can talk a little bit about the chapter art.
Oh yeah,
as ever, we have a glorious photo of
shot of Hagrid
who has dustbin-sized hands and feet the size of baby dolphins.
Is that what it says? Feet the size of baby dolphins?
I believe it does.
I think you're right.
Yeah. I think that's the description.
I really like the owl on his shoulder here, because its eyes are just going every which way in the chapter art. Yeah. It's just like... Burr! Really kind of derpy looking owl.
I know, it's true. You get a glorious shot of the umbrella as well, which is just great. I call it 11 out of 10 in terms of chapter art.
Fantastic. Really, really captures the magnitude of the man, as it were.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Although as we do look ahead to chapter 5, we have Diagon Alley. As next week's episode.
Diagonally.
Diagonally.
I feel like when they say that, like, they're like, I thought that's what he said. That's a completely unreasonable mistake to make, but I think that's what he said.
Yes.
Like, like Diagon Alley and Diagonally are complete. There's no reason at all those even sound the same.
That to me almost felt like one of these things where like people met Diagon Alley and found it to be wonderful and whimsical, and nobody was not nearly enough people were putting together the wordplay, which was diagonally.
Yeah.
And I almost felt like it was like, all right, are people not getting what's going on?
Yeah.
Like, do they not see the sheer cleverness of this name?
Right.
It's like, well, I'm going to make you.
Yeah.
Like, we're on book two? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Harry's going to accident himself right on over into Nocturnally. It's the same game. It's the exact same thing.
Oh. Yeah. Nocturnally. Yeah,
Nocturnally.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing wordplay. I'm very excited. And this is like, you know, speaking of watching your character gain all of the new little power ups, all the new abilities, like going shopping in the wizarding world when Harry just a day ago had no idea this aspect of himself.
Oh, I know.
And the very next day he's out shopping for cauldrons and wands and robes. Like, nothing in my mind could be better. So I'm looking forward to delving into, again, Chapter 5, Diagon Alley.
Oh, I know. We get to meet some brand new characters in here. We get to meet Ollivander. We get to meet Draco Malfoy.
True. I know. It's exciting. It's going to be a big chapter for sure.
Yes, it is.
But Jay, do you have a review?
I sure do, Ben.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Okay,
all right.
On
so this review is from, I think I'm saying it right, Neve. Just says, so ready for this. A perfect opportunity for my fiance to get his first reread of the series in almost 20 years. We love the Carlin Bros, and I took place in their walking challenge over the summer and had a blast, and I know I'll have a blast with this podcast too.
Amazing. Yeah, we had a really fun event earlier this year that hopefully we'll be able to do again in the future, called our Miles Managed Step Competition.
Mm-hmm.
It was really cool. We basically like charted course from platform 9 3/4, well, King's Cross Station, rather, in London, and ran it all the way up, you know, kind of the coastline of England to sort of remote Scotland to a specific set of coordinates that we once found to be as like our,
that's right,
our like believed to be location,
yeah,
of the Hogwarts castle.
That video was so fun because, yeah, like the idea is that like you're not supposed to know where Hogwarts castle is specifically, but it's sort of like, yeah, it's up there, it's in the north, it's, yeah,
right, yeah, like
Scotland,
like the mountains,
Scotland,
in the lochs,
it's in the mountains, and there's a lake and there's that, and so there, like, we found like a specific lake that has a castle that looks ruined on it, and it's like on this little island, and it's like, oh no, of course it has to look like a ruined castle
because
that's what it would look like to muggles,
right.
And then like because it's on an island, it's like the island is so little, if you go on like Google Maps, like you can't drop yourself on the island itself, but you can like drop yourself on like a piece of shoreline near it, and there was this I think it was just like a glitch in Google Maps on that day, but we tried it on a few computers and it happened on all of them, where like if you put yourself on the piece of the map closest to the island and try to like spin around, there was like, you could see literally everything, like from the 360 view, you could look around and see all the trees behind you, but like the one square where the island, where the castle should be, like would not load no
on
matter
any
what
screen.
And
it was like what is happening
like it's like being magically concealed, that's what's happening, it's messing with Google Maps, like,
yes,
it's magic, it works. So that was our exact coordinates confirmed of Hogwarts Castle. If you want to check out that video, that was a super fun one.
It was really cool. Yeah. Yeah. So, but anyway, yeah. So back to Neve's, description of our step competition. So we basically had like a 120-mile journey. So as you would walk out in the real world, your progress would be mapped on like a little dot traveling up the coast, and we had like all these little checkpoints along the way,
yeah,
and like little things you could interact with, and it was really fun. It was a cool community thing. I think we had over 5,000 people participate.
It was fun, which
was really amazing.
There was medals if you finished.
There were indeed. Yeah, so really, really great event. So something to hopefully look forward to, in future years to come. We'll be sure to let you know about it if and when that does become a reality. But otherwise, guys, I think that is all for this week. And until next week in Chapter 5, which again is Diagon Alley.
Yeah, so thanks for joining us. If you want to leave us a review, maybe we'll read it here on the show. But otherwise, we look forward to Chapter 5, Diagon Alley, here on Through the Gryffindor.